spend a lot of time on our podcast trying to encourage people to go out and enjoy the outdoors. We bring guests on to inspire you to go out and enjoy the outdoors. Well, today, we're doing something a little bit different, which we probably don't do nearly enough of. We're going to talk about how to keep yourself safe while you're in the outdoors. That's part of what we're doing here. We're also talking about a disease that we can say is unique to most of the people affected by this are those of us who go into the outdoors, including myself. We're going to be talking about Lyme disease. And with us to do that is Kendall Apps. Kendall has created a platform to help find emotional and mental healing and has been raising awareness for Lyme disease and its treatment. Kendall, welcome to Papa Bear Hikes.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, I've gotten a little tongue-tied there. I feel like I've been talking all day, so I apologize for that.
That's quite all right.
So Kendall, let's start off by telling us a little bit about yourself. You're from the Lake Tahoe area, so you obviously are somebody who enjoys the outdoors. I would guess, maybe I'm making too much of an assumption, but being out there, you have a lot of it to enjoy. But start off telling us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, I don't think you're very far off. I grew up, born and raised here in the Lake Tahoe area. My parents were always really good about taking me out for hikes and camping, backpacking, to the point that I loved it so much while I was in college. I even studied away in Yosemite and got to live there. So definitely love my time outside, and you can't miss it being here. So kind of my journey was around the age of 13. I was on a school field trip and believed that I was bitten by a tick then. It was actually in California at the time, Point Bonita. And it started to just have odd symptoms here and there, nothing really quite tied together. And, 13 years later, I finally got a diagnosis of Lyme disease. And not only had my life been changed before with just how I was not really functioning like a normal child, just fatigued all the time, had all sorts of these different medical issues that really couldn't be put together by different doctors. And so, 13 years later, finally got a diagnosis. And, things usually get worse before they get better. But I've never felt better than I have in my entire life than I do now. And it really provides the opportunity to kind of spread awareness so nobody has to go through that long, lengthy, really debilitating process of finding healing when you have Lyme disease. So now I'm currently working in marketing in the Lake Tahoe area and making sure that I'm getting out in the outdoors regardless of what comes my way.
So 13 years you were trying to get a diagnosis. You went through your teen years, young adult years. And you must have been thinking, what is wrong with me, right? I mean, I had Lyme disease myself, and I can only imagine as a kid, right, you must be looking around at your peers and thinking to yourself, why am I tiring out so quickly? Why am I always feeling so, fatigued? What was that like?
Oh, absolutely. Gosh, I can remember especially, so I would have gotten it right around going from fifth grade into sixth grade. So you're about 11 or 12 years old at that time. And so, you're kind of coming into your own, trying to figure out how do you fit in the first place. And then you're just so tired all the time. And one of my symptoms was like my hair stopped growing. I was so excited. I donated it to Locks of Love, and then it never grew after that. Well, that wasn't really the purpose, right? And so there is that. I used to have such bad rashes all over my body, to the point that I started to wear tights and makeup on my legs because it was so bad and so embarrassing, and didn't really want to. And then there was no reason for it, So then you start to wonder, is it something I'm doing? Is there something that's just so different about me? And kids are not kind at that age either. So plenty of teasing happens. And I remember too, being in high school, and I was a volleyball player. I always was active. That was something my parents always encouraged me to do. But gosh, I would just get so tired so quickly and was wondering, I worked out all summer. I was training for this season, and I just couldn't keep up. Like, what was going on? So definitely did not keep up athletically, I guess, with some of the other people as well as I could have if I was healthy. Still totally did my best, but I paid for it more so on the latter effect. I remember just being so exhausted, not being able to wake up on my own. I'm so thankful. I was able to rely on my parents a lot to help me to wake up and make sure I was getting to school. And I think it was my junior year, I was sitting in a class, and I am a good student. Like, I am your type A, answers to everything. And I remember falling asleep a couple times, just so, so tired. I was mortified by that. But definitely, there was something clearly not right. And I was very thankful, you know, my mom also helped me to kind of find a direction, but there was just no sign of what was truly wrong. It was just the accumulation of these different effects. Additionally, I had these sinus infections that would happen every month, really, and finish a round of antibiotics, and then I'd have to restart all over again. So it was like I was always sick with something. There was always something wrong with Kendall. What is going on? So definitely a different way to grow up as a kid. I'd say it took a lot of my childhood for sure.
Mm-hmm. Now, it took 13 years for you to get a diagnosis?
Yes, 13 years and a multitude of doctors.
So I guess what, they were just treating your symptoms? Nobody was thinking, okay, nobody put the symptoms together. They were just saying, okay, she has a rash, let's treat the rash. She has a sinus infection, we'll treat the sinus infection.
Exactly. It was a lot of Band-Aid effects, really. Just kind of, you know, here's an issue, we're going to go ahead and treat that. Here's a different issue, we'll treat that. Going to different doctors, different specialists saying, hey, here's an issue, what does that look like? Nobody ever took the time and said, hey, there's clearly something going on. There's nothing making sense. There's nothing actually fixing these issues. They're Band-Aid effects. Those issues that you have aren't even getting better. It wasn't until I went to an internist here who was very interested in my case. It was the first time a doctor had ever taken interest and said, whoa, you know, I don't understand what's going on here. Let me look in deeper and get a little. She was kind of excited about, you know, what's going on. I've never seen something like this. But yeah, it was just one Band-Aid solution after another.
Yeah, that had to have been frustrating because this is something that could be diagnosed from a blood test. Right. If somebody just taken a time and put together the list and said, you know what, why don't we just rule it out? Why don't we do the blood test and rule it out?
You know, that's very true. And I, you know, when I was bit by a tick, and I didn't actually remember getting bit by it, that was just what I can deduce my symptoms, my symptom onset to. I remember a woman on the field trip had worn a certain kind of lotion and was covered in ticks. And of course, they briefly checked all the students and everything, but they can be as small as a poppy seed. They even look like a freckle. So you'd have no idea. They bite and they leave an anesthetic, so you wouldn't even feel it happening. So that's where I can best deduce it to. But yeah, no, nobody really had a true answer. And the reality is that, yes, you can get a blood test. And they can treat you. Really, you should immediately get onto some medicine. However, I was told here more often than not, especially now having that diagnosis, when I speak to other doctors, that it's all in my head, that Lyme disease isn't real. The CDC actually doesn't really even support that it can be a long-lasting issue. They believe, you know, you can go 3 weeks with this treatment and then you're done, you're good. But the majority of people still continue to feel symptoms if you do not treat it within those first 48 hours. So nobody ran that blood test on me because nobody thought that we even had it out here. There's very limited information on Lyme disease. And most people believe that it is only located in the East Coast. So being on the East Coast, being on the West Coast, it was not even an issue. They didn't even think about it. We actually have a larger population of Lyme-infected ticks over here on the West Coast than we do in some of the smaller states on the West Coast, or on the East Coast, excuse me. So it could have easily been diagnosed way sooner and I wouldn't be suffering these long-term effects, but here we are.
Yeah. They know so little still. I think back to 1995 when I was diagnosed with it. And a lot of people just felt like, well, it's only something it's only something you get if you go into the woods. You have to have been bit by a tick. So if you have these symptoms and you don't recall being bit by a tick, well, you can have Lyme disease. People don't understand. You pointed this out, how small those ticks are. We're not talking about the tick you pulled off your dog. These ticks, like you said, they're the size of a poppy seed. You would not even know it. They will fall off you before they're not painful. It's not a painful type of thing. It's likely to fall off you and you won't even know it was there.
We'll be back after a quick break.
You ever think about what might be in the water you're drinking every time you fill up your water bottles while you're in the outdoors? I try not to, and I really don't, because I use Sawyer water filters. Sawyer filter technology, because of their high standards, every filter is individually tested 3 times through the process. I've been using their permethrin product for years now to protect me from, well, quite frankly, ticks, and the picaridin to keep the flies at bay. Don't let bad water, insects, or a tick bite cut your trip short or even ruin it. Use Sawyer products. Go to your local outdoor retailer and ask for Sawyer products, whether it's a water filter, insect repellent. They're likely to have it. You can also go to Sawyer's website and read more about these incredible, high-quality products that they offer for those of us who enjoy the outdoors.
Exactly. Yeah, you would have no idea that it even happened to you. It's a sneaky thing that happens, really.
And you don't always get the bullseye rash that's talked about.
No, in fact, the last research I saw on that said that there was about 25% of people that actually saw the bullseye rash. And so, unfortunately, most doctors are trained to look for the bullseye rash, and no one ever has that. So when we're only looking for one specific symptom, when all of the other symptoms are blaring in your face, we're missing the bigger picture there. But yeah, they also go for, ticks will oftentimes go for very hidden spaces. So that might look like under the armpit or in your hairline or anywhere where it's moist, but it oftentimes a lot harder to see.
Yeah, my doctor, I just basically said, well, you probably didn't see the bullseye rash because it was probably in your hair, probably got into your hairline. And, mm-hmm. Applying that logic of where the ticks typically will go. And, I've told people that, the ticks you're likely to pull off of you that you see that are in the process of embedding themselves, they're not the ones that are carrying Lyme disease. They have other diseases they could be carrying. But the ones that carry Lyme disease, they're so small, you're not likely to ever know.
That's actually very accurate. They oftentimes the nymph ticks, so it's the baby ones that are so small to see that you'd oftentimes overlook them. I think oftentimes we are looking for something that's about the size of a mosquito or a spider on us, and that's not the case. A lot of times too, when we're out hiking, we've got different types of clothes on and different material that they might blend in on, and they might not even bite you when you're on the trail. They'll bite you later on. So definitely very easy to hide. They're not my favorite bug out there.
No, as far as when you get them home, one of my hiking friends told us a story about a hike we went on last year, and he got home and there was a tick on his shirt, or that was in his, it had gotten into his hamper. And he said, yeah, it must've, been on his clothing, took off his clothing, put it in a hamper. Fortunately, it never embedded itself on him. But yeah, they don't always do it right out there. And probably most of the time, they're not doing it when they're right out there. They're making their way into, well, where they want to be, waistbands, hairlines, under the arms.
Well, in addition to that, if you're out hiking or walking around with your dogs can actually bring them in. And while ticks might bite the dog, they can also just latch on and wait until you get to another place, and your dogs can carry them into the house where they can latch on or whatnot. That's also another thing to be aware of.
Yeah. In hiking, we call them hitchhikers. All right. It's, when you're walking, usually if you're walking through tall grass, we have a lot of that out here in the Northeast. And that your legs and your pants rub up against the tall grass, yeah, you'll end up with some bugs or a tick that, they kind of just hopped on you and you're going along for the ride. And yeah, they can be there a long time and you wouldn't even know it.
Right. And I think we're oftentimes trained more as whether you're a dog owner or not, we're told about Lyme disease. That most people know what Lyme disease is and how it can affect their dogs, but we really do not raise the same kind of concern when Lyme disease can affect humans. To kind of put things into perspective, there's a recent story about how a horse was bitten by 3 ticks, and that horse was paralyzed until they were able to get that horse treatment. Like, a horse is a big animal. And so we're told about the severity of what happens if dogs get Lyme disease and the different treatments that they can get or the prevention, but we never talk about it with us. And if something that small can take down a horse or a dog, you better believe it can take down a human as well.
Right. I mean, you know, I'm thinking a 5-year-old, right? Mm-hmm. What kind of an effect and how quick it can have an effect on a 5-year-old?
Oh my gosh. You know,
a child, right? But yeah, it's something that just doesn't seem to get much attention. And it's something I've been aware of and following for, oh boy, now maybe almost 30 years or over 25 years. And it just doesn't seem to get attention. And it seems like when it does, the attention is, you know, how are we just going to treat these symptoms? How are we just going to make it go away right now? And right. not focusing on what could be happening years later. And my own experiences, I'm 57 now. I was diagnosed, I think it was 95. I still feel like I have residual effects from it. I have days where I just really struggle to get myself out of the bed, or, you know, I'm just having joint pain for no reason at all. I can go on 15-mile hikes or 40-mile bike rides and feel okay, but I can have days where I'm just doing my regular work around the house, working on my computer, and my joints are sore.
It can be.
And that's a lot of years later.
Right. And that's something that too, that is not spoken about enough. You know, we can get that temporary treatment that might work, but most people don't realize how long those effects can actually last, how hard it is to treat when it's gone untreated for so long. Or, you know, it just often does not go away with that first round of antibiotics, especially when you don't even know if something's bitten you, but you're feeling these symptoms. Those are, you know, Lyme disease, even down to the biological sense, is very elusive. Couple interesting things about it is that when you're bitten by a tick, you can get Lyme disease as well as a myriad of co-infections. Well, what it does on the biological level is it's a spirochete. And so it actually looks a lot, it's the same structure as like HIV or AIDS. And interestingly enough, it protects itself with a biofilm, which hides itself inside of your nervous and your immune system. Well, when you start to treat it, it actually starts to change its DNA because it wants to thrive inside of the host. So as soon as you start treating it, it starts to kind of get exacerbated. And then it changes its DNA. So it wants to continue to live there. So when you treat it from the very beginning, if you catch it in that moment within those first 48 hours, you have a higher success rate as opposed to when it has lived in your body for 13 years, like myself, or most people don't actually get a diagnosis for at least 2 years. So if it's been living in your body, it's gotten comfortable, it knows how to hide from different things. And then once you start treating it, it starts to change itself so that it can stay inside of your body.
Yeah. And that's consistent with a lot of what I've read over the years. Mine wasn't caught very quickly either. And, mm-hmm. you know, I was to the point where I struggled to get myself off the couch. I didn't have a physical job. I worked in an office. I'd come home from work 5:30, lay on the couch and stay there till the next morning. Couldn't get myself up off the couch. And it wasn't until finally, my wife said, you know, you shouldn't, at your age, you shouldn't be feeling this way. Something's wrong. You better go see the doctor. And, I was lucky. I had an internist. Yes. And I was very fortunate. I had an internist that, just started ordering blood tests. He says, you know, do you spend time in the outdoors? Okay. We're just, you know, I don't think you have it. You don't have any of the symptoms. I don't see the rash, but we're going to do a blood test to see if you have it. And I did.
Gosh, I'm so glad that they even thought about doing that blood test.
That's the way my doctor was. And that was when I was living in New Jersey, and I missed that doctor. It's probably the biggest thing I missed from New Jersey is I had a great doctor down there. He was very thorough. And, yes, I was very fortunate because, my kids had been bitten by ticks, and one of them was showing symptoms, and we think we may have gotten it early enough, but the pediatrician just said, no, that can't be Lyme disease. No, there's no signs of Lyme disease. There would have been a bullseye rash. I'm not going to waste the time or money to, those weren't their words, but you kind of got the feeling of what they wanted to say to you is, I'm not going to waste the time and money to do this.
And, right. Those are so frustrating when you're just trying to find help, especially as a parent wanting so badly to help your child. You can see his suffering and something's going on. And then to be turned away and told that, you're silly for pursuing that when all you want to do is, I just want a solution. I don't even care what it is. I just want an answer so we can get this, so we can get my child or myself better. I saw a doctor at one point and after I received my diagnosis. And this is when I realized how much I needed to be my own best advocate, especially now that I have a diagnosis. I went in for something specific and I told him what some of my medical history was, including Lyme disease. And he told me, he looked me in the face and said, oh, Lyme disease is not real. You think you have Lyme disease? I'll cure you right now. He snapped his fingers and he said, you're good. It's so common for many doctors to not be, to not learn the extremes and how serious Lyme disease is. And I don't blame doctors. I blame the education on that because CDC has not made it a serious issue. It's oftentimes we look healthy. We look very healthy, but it's an invisible illness. So it's very easy for people to look at you and say, well, you don't look sick. And they oftentimes are turned away, told that it's all in your head, which is so frustrating because, man, that starts to make you feel like you're kind of crazy, especially when you start sleeping more often or your joints hurt. And I mean, I could tell you all sorts of different symptoms for what I was going through that you get told it's all in your head. It's not really happening.
You bring that up and I've heard stories of people being treated for depression.
Yes.
Who end up having Lyme disease.
Yeah. Mental health issues are really one of the big things that get brought up to the surface. I myself dealt with some depression and anxiety during about a couple of years ago. It was brought up. Oftentimes, if you have a predisposition to a mental illness, Lyme disease will kind of bring that up to the surface. The number one leading cause of death from Lyme disease is actually suicide. Because it is so difficult to deal with this and because of how much of a depressive state it puts you in, and then to be told constantly that what you're experiencing isn't legitimate can kind of make you go a little crazy. So it's one of those really sad downfalls that we don't have a lot of support on. But definitely one big thing that comes up, and as a whole mixture, is not fun.
Yeah, you went through this for 13 years, and I can't imagine, what it must have been like. They're telling me there's nothing wrong with me, but I know there is. I know how I feel.
Yeah, that was, I was thankful for a while there. I was young enough where I didn't know. And I honestly had been sick pretty much my whole childhood and didn't really know what was any different. I got to a certain point that I thought, maybe this is how I have to learn how to live my life. Can you imagine like being 13, 15, 18 years old, sick? I can't hardly wake up. I'm exhausted every day. My body hurts. I've got rashes everywhere. I get this random bruising. I've got brain fog. I can't think straight. And just this whole series of issues. I even got tremors. And to think, okay, nobody can seem to figure out what's wrong with me. Maybe this is my normal. How to accept that as a normal as a teenager. Really at any age, I think that's hard because you just want to be healthy and be able to live your best, most active, enjoyed life. I used to sleep for 36 hours straight and that's not normal. But to get to a point where you have to rationalize, how do I successfully live my life with this being my normal? In my opinion, it's unhealthy. But if that's what you have to do because you can't get any answers, that's what you have to do.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I spoke a little bit about the residual effects. Yeah, and it's not like I'm constantly in that state. Mm-hmm. I go up and down where, because I was, up until my 20s, I was very active. I was a very restless person. I was that overactive person. And So I still go back and forth with that almost in a manic way where, you know, I can for 2 days be getting by on a few hours sleep or get my 8 hours sleep and get up and have all this energy and feel great, but then go through these periods where, you know, what's going on?
Right.
And it's why I've always asked, if it's always been in the back of my mind, and I've never brought this up with my doctor, and that's why, you know, reading your bio and your information, I'm like, you know, it's possible these symptoms I've been having for the last 25 years, these could be residual effects. It's been in the back of my head for a long time. Am I feeling residual effects from when I had Lyme disease?
Right. Well, they do talk about that chronic post-Lyme syndrome. And I'm certainly not a doctor, so couldn't say anything. But I think that's a very real case. There's, unfortunately, if it's not caught quickly and it's in your system longer, while you may be able to go through treatment, there's not one true way to treat it. There's so many different options, so many different ways that people start to feel better, and it kind of treats symptoms, but it doesn't necessarily get it completely out of your system in every case. So sometimes it's just finding that better quality of life, which is good, but also unfortunate that you just can't quite eradicate it. But I think that's more common than not, just having those kind of residual symptoms continue to be there. Sometimes, you know, I had a doctor describe this, and I hate to use the word, but the reality is that they're comparable in this way. With cancer, you do go through treatment, right? And then you go into remission for a certain amount of years. Well, that's technically how it goes with Lyme disease, is you go into remission for some of these things, and they constantly, if depending on your doctor, you might be repeatedly testing to make sure that that hasn't come back. And then after a certain point, you can say, okay, that's probably either definitely going to stay in remission, or it might come back. So there's definitely some wiggle room in there in terms of what it looks like to either get rid of it completely, or you might experience some things prolonged, but definitely better to reach out to somebody and say, hey, I've got these things going on, because that's not normal. And I don't think anybody should consistently live in that pain. I can't tell you how thankful I am to have been through and continue to go through treatment, because like I said before, I've never felt better in my entire life than I do right now. And that's because I didn't settle with this unhealthy, this my body hurting and being sick is not normal.
Yeah, I know. My doctor told me pain or discomfort is not normal at any age or at any time. And when you feel it, you should tell your doctor. Well, he was a good doctor, but the truth is that a lot of these doctors, I've had people my age have their doctors tell them, well, you're getting older. And so, you know, it's like, just accept it. We're not going to figure out why you're not feeling so well. It's just part of getting older. Kendall, what kind of treatments are you going through now? Since your diagnosis and you said you're continuing to be treated for it, what are these treatments that you're receiving?
Sure. So I am currently on an antibiotics treatment, and I meet with my doctor about every 3 months, and we take a look at my lab results and what those are doing, and then sometimes readjust that. But I'm on an antibiotics treatment right now. For a while there too, it was I had to have different medications brought into cycle because I was experiencing such bad symptoms that I was not living a real quality of life. But I'm very excited that I'm almost a year of having no symptom medication. I'm just on antibiotics for the treatment.
Great. That's good news. So this is pretty much going to be a lifestyle change for you though. I mean, it sounds like this is something you're going to have to be on top of for your life, the rest of your life, right? If you feel these symptoms, you're going to need to see your doctor and see if you're going to need another treatment or if it's something else.
You know, when I started out treatment, the initial thought process was that I would probably be in treatment for approximately 5 years. Well, in August, I will hit 5 years. The other part of this that I think is sometimes missed is not only do you get Lyme disease, but you also get co-infections. And these co-infections work to really protect Lyme and keep it in your body. It wants to survive. And so they all have these coping mechanisms. And so I've had to fight the co-infections out of my body first. And, you know, the other issue is that we don't have great testing, because there's not a lot of research dollars that go to this because it's largely downplayed. So because of that, we're doing all that we, the best that we can. And so I'm on like a daily regimen. And my goal, you know, I've started to even think about it. Like, when does this end? When is the end gonna come? And the reality is that I don't know, but I do know that I want to fight and I want it to be out of my body, because there are, a lot of new research that's coming out that, you know, you can pass it on to your children now, or, you know, if you pass it on to your children, it's far harder to beat that if you're born with it. So there's a lot of reasons to continue to fight. And at the end of the day, I don't want to be, you know, if I was to go off treatment and suddenly 5 years later and it comes back, then, you know, do I have to go through the whole process again? I mean, I went on disability at one point at my university just to be able to graduate, for just because it got so bad. And so I know I don't want to backtrack and get to that point. But I'm hoping there's an end in sight. I just don't know when that is. So it's better to be aware of it before it even happens.
Yeah. Now I want to talk a little bit about, you know, people talk about, how do you prevent tick bites? You know, I think a lot of us now people are in the habit of putting bug repellents on them. I treat my clothing with permethrin, but that's not a guarantee, right? Those things aren't going to guarantee. I mean, do we even know how effective they are? Do they keep ticks away? Well, we know they keep the bigger ticks away, but do we know they keep them all away? We don't know those things. But what we're finding out is we're not just getting them when we go into the woods. I read a really interesting article about 10 years ago about Lyme disease, and it was very enlightening. It was written by a doctor who took this position on it. He started the article off talking about, okay, so you think that you're safe in your backyard from getting Lyme disease. Well, think about this. You walk out there barefoot, and you have all kinds of rodents, you know, chipmunks, squirrels, et cetera, that are running around out there. Mm-hmm. It's not just the deer that are carrying these. You know, these ticks are coming in. They're getting into your backyards. They're getting out to the golf courses. And basically saying, no matter where you are and you're outdoors, you really need to have an alertness to this. That it's not something that's just restricted to people that are spending a lot of time in the woods.
Right. I'm actually really glad that you said that, because oftentimes I think I remember even getting a call from one of the agencies for infectious disease when I was diagnosed with this. And they said, have you been in any tall brush lately? And I go, no, at that time I had not been. And it was within the last three months or 3 weeks or something like that. And I had not. But the reality is exactly like you said, it's coming in from so many different animals that are bringing it into your backyard. It doesn't have to be in the tall brush. It can be, you know, while you are out hiking, it's, in your backyard. Absolutely. It's by water sources. It's actually now found in, Lyme infected ticks are found in every state now. And, I think it was over 100 countries in the world. Wow. So it is everywhere. And they're also finding too, it's not just being carried by ticks anymore. They found that some spiders are carrying them, and, even mosquitoes are carrying Lyme disease now.
Wow. Mm-hmm. So that's interesting. And I did hear one theory about how it was growing. And it was a study done by a herpetologist, but they were attributing it to the decline of the venomous snake population throughout the country. There had been, especially in the north. Well, this is when I think it was more considered a northeast issue. But the claim was that the venomous snakes feed on mice. And at this point, they were kind of leaning towards, it wasn't so much the deer that were the host, it was mice that were carrying these ticks around. Mm. So I guess, you know, there's a lot of research into, you know, how are they getting here? But now you're pointing out, it's not just ticks. It'd be the spiders that we don't, you know, that might be in your house or your patio or your basement. It could be a mosquito.
Right. It's in a lot of different places. And even just the ticks are very resilient. You know, they can survive in really high temperatures. They can survive in below freezing temperatures. And with, you know, at least here on the West Coast, we've had quite a few different weather patterns that have been interesting that that the ticks have been thriving on, where we had a lot of water that happened. So then there were more, or a lot of precipitation. So then more ticks stayed in the, in a smaller phase of their life for longer, or even in their eggs. And then there were far more that hatched. It was a weird time for their breeding. So we have significantly more ticks than we've actually ever had in the past, just because of some of those things. An interesting thing, though, there's actually a lizard that has in their bloodstream or whatever, they've got something that can counteract the Lyme disease that is coming from ticks. So when a lizard eats them, they're fine. Now, if we could figure out how to get more of those lizards, that would be great. But they are pretty resilient and can be found anywhere now.
Yeah. And that's where they were going with the copperhead snakes. And I think it was the Eastern timber rattlesnake was another one that they pointed to. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the tick didn't have the deer tick didn't have an effect on them.
Oh, interesting.
Right. They were able just to eat them. So at least there's some research that's starting to occur on that level too, to why is this happening and why is it spreading?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, as you know firsthand, not enough of it, right?
Not enough of it. There are, you know, recently there was the Tick Act that came into that has kind of resurfaced, that's being pushed to bring awareness and also to raise money for that in terms of some government spending for research. But the amount that is being pushed into the realm of Lyme disease is significantly low. So it's just hard to kind of get any of that information, hard to share that information. It's kind of fascinating for how many people are actually diagnosed with this year, which is almost over 500,000 people per year, how little it's known and even just how much more frequently it's popping up all over.
Now, last year, my wife had sent me an article and I wish I had held on to it. It was, you know, long before I thought I'd ever be doing a podcast, and wow, I wish I had that right in front of me now. But there was talk of a vaccine or researching a possible vaccine for Lyme disease. Do you have any knowledge of that?
You know, we used to have a vaccine here back in the 70s and 80s for Lyme disease. But then they found that it was ineffective and nobody felt that it was that big of an issue. So you had a lot more anti-vaxxers. They actually pulled it out of production. Now, in Europe, such as Denmark, and I think Germany and one other country, they actually have a Lyme disease vaccine that they give kids just the same as they would, you know, any of the ones that we receive here. Those are just kind of part of the regular good health checkups. And then I have heard recently that they're kind of working on putting one together, but I don't anticipate that to be out or available in the next couple of years. I'm sure it's got to go through a little bit more of a process at this point, but I think it's thrilling that there could even be a vaccine out there for Lyme disease. If I had known then, and if it had been available then, and having gone through all this now, no question would I have gotten that so that I could be protected from it. You just don't know when it's going to hit you and just how debilitating it can really be. It changes your whole life.
And it took you 13 years to get a proper diagnosis. It must go through your head that there must be so many people out there that just have not been properly diagnosed, that may go their whole lives without being properly diagnosed.
You know, and here's the other issue, and you're spot on. Many people go, I think the average is about 2 years of people going misdiagnosed in terms of that's generally where most people are diagnosed, is around the 2 year mark. Some people are diagnosed very quickly. And it kind of depends on where you're located. But then there's others that I know that it took them 26 years to get treated. You know, it takes a long time. There was even a video I was in recently talking about how long it took us. And my jaw just dropped at how long it took some people. It's just, if it takes any longer than those first 2 weeks to get your blood results back, that's, in my opinion, too long. Because you need to have an answer and you need to have a direction to go forward in. I had another thought on that, but I lost it there.
It's just frustrating. You know, it's a blood test.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know how much these things cost. I don't know the nuances of medical billing or medical insurance, but it's a blood test. I just can't wrap my head around why, if somebody walks in with some of these symptoms, just saying, hey, just draw another vial of blood. Let's test it. Right. What do we have to lose? I don't get it. I don't. And
the other part, sorry to cut you off there. Lyme disease is also called the great imitator. I made a recent post on just on my social media, and it was talking about all the different misdiagnoses that people have gotten. So it's called the great imitator. It is like, it's the dirty needle of nature, because it can look like so many different things. I actually created that post by getting I pulled a lot of my followers and asked, like, what were some of your misdiagnoses? I had almost 30 different misdiagnoses that people have been diagnosed with before they ever got tested for Lyme disease, because it looks like so many different things, which is why it's also so elusive. But it took far too long for people to get that. And I think still the issue is that most people believe that it's still only on the East Coast. And so if you only think it's over there and you live on the West Coast or in the Midwest, you're not even thinking Lyme disease, which I think is a big issue to not even look at that. But you're right. It's just one blood test. And when it's covered by insurance, it's not a big deal because you can get it through the CDC and your doctor. However, there's a couple of other resources that are far better and more specific for Lyme if you're going to get a blood test. And that would be something like through iGenics, which looks at the specific strains and helps to understand that on a deeper level than what the CDC provides.
Yeah. Well, you are doing more than just recovering from this. You are obviously getting the word out just by being on this podcast, and you have a website dedicated to this. Let's talk about your involvement. I don't want to call it a crusade, but you are, you wanting to get the word out here. You feeling the need almost to bring attention to this.
Absolutely. I just feel that I went through so much heartbreak and heartache going through this, and it could have been prevented. It could have been avoided. So my goal at the end of the day is I would love to make other people aware and to encourage them to do proper protection and prevention so that they don't get this and they don't have to deal with this and the long-term effects for how it affects your life, the people's lives around you. I think the other thing too is it's really powerful to be able to validate other people going through this that oftentimes don't know what they're suffering from, need help, need some resources, and you don't know where to find them. It was really hard to find when I was going through that. And I thought, why would I let anybody else go through this? So instead of asking like, why me? Why did I get Lyme disease? I've said like, great. Why not me? Why not me? Because I have a voice that I would love to talk about this. I've got a passion to share this information so that people don't have to walk down that. So I've been putting together resources and just different information, letting people that have Lyme disease feel seen and heard. I regularly write and speak with different doctors and educators so that we are actively moving in the right direction in terms of education on that level so that not only is it on the patients, but it's also on the doctors or even school teachers. You know, I got Lyme disease because I went to a school function. So having those conversations, but at the end of the day, educating people enough to know it's not normal to feel this way. And here's how you can prevent it. And if you have it, here's how we can address that moving forward. So I've got a lot of ideas that are on the horizon that I'm just finishing building out and piecing together, but a lot more to come for sure. But it's definitely a huge passion of mine that I think is well worth the time and effort.
Kendall, on this podcast, I bring guests on who I like to think of the people who are breaking down barriers, who are trying to do the right thing to make us a better society and a better people. And thank you, because that's what we need. We need people like you that want to make a difference, want to change. Change is good. We shouldn't be afraid of change. know, and yes, so thank you for not just recovering from this, but saying, hey, I want to help other people avoid this, or I want to let other people know they're not alone.
Absolutely. And thank you so much for having me on here. I remember having this feeling of when I got diagnosed, it was like, I felt like everybody else could see it on me, that I was sick, that I was broken, that I was no good anymore, that I was, you know, kind of not worth bothering with in a sense, because I was not, like, I couldn't help myself at all. My mom had to help bathe me at a certain point. And some of these things are just not normal. And at the end of the day, I'm like, you know what? I'm more than a label. I'm more than this. I can come out of this. And I do believe that there's hope beyond health, and that sick is strong, and that you can come out of this more than, even brighter than you ever did. There's a lot of resiliency that is built up. Definitely has led to a lot of passion. So I'm here to make a difference.
And I love that. I hear the passion, and I love how you've taken a situation that was, you know, devastating for you, right? And mm-hmm. and but now you're doing something positive with it. And that's wonderful. I mean, there's other things people can be doing with their time, but, you know, you've taken this as a passion of yours, and you're going to help other people. And I just think that's great. I'd really commend you for that.
Thank you. Helping people is what's worth it.
Yeah. So I know you're not a doctor, but I'm going to ask this question. Mm-hmm. If somebody thinks they might have the symptoms, what would you suggest they do?
Well, there's a couple of things that they can do. One of those would, you know, certainly I do a little bit of research to make sure that you can identify that, bring a little bit more information to your doctor when you do. If you go to Global Lyme Alliance, that's actually a really great resource that kind of describes what Lyme disease looks like, what different symptoms might look like. And it'll additionally connect you with a Lyme literate medical doctor, someone that's in your area. But that would be a really good step to take. If you ever actually find a tick on your body, if you remove that, you have to remove it carefully. And, you know, there's a lot of ways to not remove a tick. But when you do remove it, you can actually put it in a bag through Igenics and send that off, and they'll have it tested. That way, then you've got another avenue of looking into that. But at the end of the day, more than anything, if you believe that you have symptoms or something just isn't right, you've got these different things going on that doesn't seem normal and you can't seem to get answers, you have to be your own best advocate and ask for it. Like I said before, you're going to be told a lot of things, that it's all in your head, that it's not a legit thing. Speaking from experience, it's absolutely something that should be taken seriously. And it's better to get into treatment sooner than later.
Yeah. Remember, you know, respect your doctor, respect their education, mm-hmm. but it's still, you're the person, you're paying the bill.
Exactly.
Don't be afraid to be a little insistent.
Absolutely. I totally agree with that.
So Kendall, how do we get more information? How do we find you? Or if you do have a website, are you on social media?
I've got social media. My website is currently in the making, so it's coming soon. But my social media, it's called Ticked. Thought it was a fun little play off of words there. And my social media handles are Ticked by Ticks. And so I put out a lot of information in terms of how to find help, different what Lyme disease looks like, where can you get it, different resources such as that, as well as, you know, how can you prevent it when you are hiking, or what kind of bug spray is best for this. I kind of talk about a lot of those, so would definitely love to connect with anybody there.
Well, we're definitely going to put your information up on our website. All your information will be in the description for the podcast. And I definitely urge everybody to look into this, take this serious, okay? Preventing tick bites or any kind of insect bite, because as you pointed out, it's now, you know, could it be spiders or mosquitoes that are now transmitting this disease in addition to deer ticks? Just take the measures. And you know what? You know, the ounce of prevention adage, right? Because we want everybody to be safe out there.
Right. There are plenty of ways to protect yourself as well, so that you don't actually end up getting Lyme disease. I know we didn't really talk a whole lot about how you can prevent mm-hmm. that, but happy to dive into that. But again, a lot of those things are going to be on my social media through Facebook and Instagram.
Well, we have a little, we have some more time. If you want to, do you have a few pointers on how to prevent tick bites?
Sure. One of my, you know, typically what they recommend for you to do is to actually tuck your pants into your socks when you're walking and to wear light colors. And I know that sometimes that sounds really silly. So, and so I'm okay with wearing light colors. I will still wear shorts, but I super lather up on my bug spray, and I've got a couple of different essential oils that are key to keeping those away. But just making sure that you're also always checking yourself. I know when my dad and brother go mountain biking, they're very aware of not going into areas that they're going to end up brushing up against a lot of things. And if they do, they are thorough with checking to make sure that they don't have anything. And you just want to make sure that you're looking a lot closer than you think that you would for a tick. Again, they can be the size of a freckle. Light colors are really best. Not only will that keep you pretty cool, but it will help you to be to notice more of what's actually happening on your body. Somebody was actually recently walking with duct tape backwards wrapped around their ankle, so the sticky side was out. They had almost 30 ticks covered on their ankles. That's how many they just happened to brush against as they were walking. So if you can put something on your body that's going to cover each part, that's really going to be your best option. And then I really love Ranger Ready repellents. They are, it's a bug spray. This is one of the best things. It doesn't smell. And we know how bad bug spray can smell sometimes. It doesn't have a smell and it doesn't feel sticky. So I use that all the time. I don't mind when I like using it after a shower or anything like that. But it's got permethrin in it, which you can always just use permethrin and infuse your clothes. And that will keep bugs such as ticks, chiggers, mosquitoes repelled from you already. Picaridin is actually another one that's used regularly in the Ranger Ready repellents. It does the same thing. Both are safe for kids and for your pets. And then if you do choose to use some of those essential oils, lemongrass is a natural tick repellent. Eucalyptus is an insect and tick repellent. Geranium is actually another good one, and that can even be applied directly to your dog's collar. Lavender prevents any tick eggs from hatching, and cedarwood is another one that kills them and is toxic to ticks. So there's definitely a couple of options. And then if you ever do see a tick on you, you want to be able to remove it in one way. You know, a lot of people remove it by either setting a fire next to it or putting something that suffocates it, and that causes the tick to actually regurgitate, leaving the lyme or co-infections in your body. So you want to be able to take tweezers that can pull out the head. You want to make sure that head gets fully removed, and then you want to put that into a Ziploc bag so you can get the tick tested for Lyme disease just because it was attached to you. And sometimes that happens, but it's better to know your resources and your opportunities before it's takes too long to get an answer.
Right. And having, like you said, the proper tools with you, having the tweezers or I don't know if you've seen this. There's actually this little thin metal tool, almost like a teardrop shape that you can, it's open. It's got like an opening in the middle, and you could pull, I've been bringing it with me, and actually I haven't had to use it fortunately, but you could put it over to tick and give it with one pull. Like if you were using tweezers, pull it out. But unlike the tweezers, it actually wraps around the tick just enough to get underneath to pull it out.
I think that's called like the tick twister or tick tornado,
Yeah, it is. Yeah. I don't know what the name of it is. I'm sitting here next. I've got my backpacking gear laid out because I'm getting ready to go on a trip in a couple of days. But it's somewhere buried in there. But yeah. But, you know, I say it's buried in there. But the truth is, in my backpack, it's right in the top lid of my bag so I can get to it
exactly where it should be as soon as
I don't want to be digging through my bag looking for it. Right.
No. Right. Absolutely not.
And here's another little thing I want to share with you and everybody listening. I found this pointer a few years ago, a lint brush. You take a lint brush after you've been in the woods or hiking and you roll a lint brush over you. And I've seen where people have picked up ticks from the lint brush, rolling it over their clothes and where they can't see, like on the back of their shirts, back of their pants.
Right. That makes sense. It's anything sticky is definitely gonna pick it up. And they're just like you said earlier today, that they are hitchhikers. They will latch on to anything, and they might not bite exactly where they first latch on, or where they first hitchhike onto your body, on your clothes. They'll find another spot very quickly. But might even, you know, if you don't do something like that, where it, you know, really gets it off of your clothes for sure, or off of your body, they're likely to, you know, bite you maybe a couple hours later, and you wouldn't even notice. So a lint roller is a great idea.
Yeah. All right, Kendall Apps, thanks so much for coming on the podcast and sharing this valuable information with us.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. And thanks so much for having me.
And good luck with everything you're doing. And as I said, we'll make sure we get these links in the description, and we'll put them up on the website.
Wonderful.
All right, everybody, just a reminder, go to papabearhikes.com and check out our 46 climbs challenge that we're taking part in. Join the Papa Bear Hikes team to help in this very important cause. It's a national organization. This year's challenge, I got my shirt in the other day, beautiful sport tee, really nice. I got a bandana. It's really goes beyond that. You're donating to a good cause and trying to help a good cause, but we're putting a team together. We're going to see how much money we can raise and how many people we can get involved, to help us take on this cause, to stomp out suicide, bring, awareness for mental health. The money, the proceeds are all going to the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. So everybody, come on, more people are signing up. Make sure you sign up and be part of the Papa Bear Hikes team for suicide prevention. Okay. All the hikers that like to have fun are signing up. So make sure you get on board with us. Get out there and have fun, and hey, be safe. This episode of Pop Bear Hikes has been brought to you by Avalon Publicity. Avalon Publicity, increasing the digital footprint of content creators and skilled professionals via website development and social media services. For more information about Avalon Publicity, go to their website, avalonbusiness.org. That's avalonbusiness.org.